Okay, welcome back to the Concert Honesty Podcast. This is episode number 97 with my good friend Jerrion Williams. You can find him online at Jerrion Drummerville Williams. Drummerville Williams. You can find him on Instagram and on Facebook. This was a hard podcast. I got a notification midway through that a mutual friend of ours, Martin Douglas, aka Dougie, passed away of COVID-19. And Dougie, I've known Dougie for about 6 years now, and all I can say is he'll be sorely missed. He owned and ran Crossfire Steel Orchestra, and was always welcoming to my students from NYU. So, hope you enjoy this conversation. This is Jerrion Williams. Jerrion Drummerville Williams, I want you. Oh shit, dude! I wore your Drummerville shirt the last like 8 days in a row.
Shucks.
So I've been quarantined. It smelled pretty bad, and Stephanie wouldn't let me wear it anymore. And I was like, I'm doing a podcast with Jerrion, and she said she didn't care, and that she loved you, and she'd be embarrassed to have me on a podcast smelling bad. So,
I can't smell you, so well, that's all right. She can, so
yeah, she wins. So how you doing, buddy? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Just home chilling.
Yeah, it's odd to me that, well, first of all, I appreciate you doing this. For folks who don't know who you are, you've been on the podcast before, but you are a drummer who lives in Trinidad and Tobago, and you play in Panorama bands. That's where I met you, but you also are the drummer for Bungie Garland and Cheyenne Lions on tour. I'm sure you drum for Marshall and other folks as well.
Yeah. I also play a couple of shows with Voice. And I probably played for almost all the soca artists in Trinidad at some point.
Yeah.
Be it one show or not. But yeah.
Yeah, well, was just down in Trinidad in February, and I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to get to hang with Jerrion. And then as soon as I got there, I was like, why did I think Jerry and I were just going to hang out nonstop? Like, you're working, I'm working, we're all working. Like, you would show up, and you had to clock in and be the drummer. And then as soon as we were done, it was like 3 a.m, and you're like, I have a 45-minute drive, and I got
to clock out.
I have a whole bottle of white oak in my stomach right now, and I have to get home in one piece.
Yeah, and my wife is home.
yeah. So anyway, it's nice to get to finally chat with you without the chaos going on. But I just am sort of checking in with friends and people I know and just seeing how they're doing. And like, this is a pretty unique worldwide event that we're all, it's rare that the human species gets to share, despite my feelings that we all share a lot more than we want to admit or are capable to admit. It's like, it's rare that we as a species get to all share in this one thing together at the exact same time.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
I'm curious, what have your thoughts been? How have things been going in Trinidad? You don't have to organize these in any specific way. Just, I'm curious to know what you're thinking. You're a smart guy, and you too are a live musician, so your entire career has been sort of put on pause.
Put on hold for a bit. It's kind of tough, though. Like, honestly, because it's coming after Carnival in Trinidad, it's a bit easier. So at least I got to make some money and, put away some. But it's like, there's no work at all. And it's not just Trinidad, obviously, it's everywhere, but it's just tough. It's like, kind of can't go outside too much. Mm-hmm. And I love being outside. So it's like, I'm just seeing walls every day. It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you talk a little bit about your, like, my experience with, I play with So, but I do some things outside of the organization, and it's not lost on me that the United States is a huge country, and there's just, when you have that much space and that much of an economy, you have that much more possibility for work. Right. And when I follow you on Instagram, I'm just like, Jerrion is like everybody, but I'm curious for you, coming from a very small country, how has the economy been affected in a place like Trinidad and Tobago in terms of the art that you make? Does most of your work come from outside of Trinidad, or is it within Trinidad?
I would say definitely yes, it comes from outside of Trinidad, because we tour. I would say we probably tour, maybe travel twice a month, maybe sometimes more. There are months that it's less, but this last 2 years has been kind of hectic. Not like over hectic, but it's been good. So to come from possibly a minimum of 2 shows a month to no shows,
mm-hmm. yeah,
is definitely different. Because yeah, traveling does take up or make up most of the earnings that I'll make for the year.
Right. So it's
rough.
Yeah. I mean, there's a international. It's like a lot of our work comes from stuff in the States. Like we don't do a lot. We do a little bit of international travel, but not enough. Like I would say it's like 5% of our overall like yearly income is stuff from international right. gigs. And for you all, like it's actually probably the opposite. You know,
yeah.
It's like everybody uh-huh. knows who Bungie is and Faye Ann and Machelle and Trinidad.
Yeah.
And outside of Carnival, like the work is elsewhere. It's not like
yep.
people in Trinidad always are hiring Bungie to come play their, you know, their kids' bar mitzvah and you know, throughout the year. You guys are going to like London, you're going to Canada, and you're all over the Caribbean. Like you guys are going everywhere.
Yep. So it's been rough. It's a hard shutdown, but as you said, it's everywhere. So it's not like you could get around it or you could go somewhere else and feel like, all right, I'll work here. I'll travel to New York or Miami and I'll work there. No, you can't do that. So everybody's affected.
How have the conversations been within, did you guys have a band meeting? Like, I don't know how any of that works. Like what have the conversations been amongst the sort of Soca community that you travel in?
Didn't have like a band meeting, but we've been talking to each other. At the end of the day, we're all in this together, and it's just to buckle down, stay safe, and stay healthy, and just ride it out. When it's over, we gotta work hard, like extra hard. So,
and
hopefully things like get back on its feet like soon. Like, even though like let's say this whole COVID-19 thing just rolls over at some point. Persons who were not making money or entities that were interested in doing stuff like putting on shows or carnivals, they might not have the funding to still do that. So mm-hmm. it might be tough. So let's hope everyone, you know, kind of buckles down and prepares for the after. You know?
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on that in a second. But how has Trinidad in particular, like, you know, I'm hyper aware culturally of how the United States tends to approach things, and how we're approaching this particular crisis is very United States-y in terms of our, like, you know, I mean, I'd say that jokingly a little bit, but I mean, our country was founded as sort of like a cowboy country. We do what we want. Fuck you, England. Yeah. We are going to, you know, King Charles, you don't get to have our money anymore. Screw you.
You can't control us.
You can't control us. Control. So we will do what we want regardless of what you think, you know, and it's like, that's been our motto since, you know, the 1700s when we decided we were going to be a country. And it's funny to me that people are so aghast that the United States, like, we're just like social distancing, whatever. It's like, that's how we do everything. It bums me out a little bit, but it's like, I'm curious how Trinidad, like, how has the social distancing thing been dealt with in Trinidad? Have folks been resistant? Have they been very supportive, or is it sort of a mix?
It's a bit of both sides. Like, there are a lot of persons who stay in the know and understand that this thing is serious and that we have to social distance and that kind of stuff. But there are a lot of people who kind of like that cowboy, you know, we'll do what we want to do kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, will be the major problem in the upcoming weeks. Like those persons who want to still go to the beach and still hang out at the river and still lime in a huge group or whatever. It's like that will definitely make the difference coming up. But we've been, like, the police has been working, like, making sure to crack down on these things. So I know they broke up a few parties, like small parties, like last couple of days or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're trying to keep, we have like a unofficial curfew going on, like, uh-huh. you know, like stay in your house when it's dark, like after 8 or 10 or something like that. Like, you shouldn't be outside.
Mm-hmm.
So the police has been, I guess, working to kind of keep that implemented. So,
have you been in touch with anybody in the police, like Curran or anybody, just to sort of see how they're doing, or is it?
Actually, I have not. That is strange.
I reached out to Curran. When I saw Curran over at Carnival, and I was like, Curran, I was like, are you off from being a policeman? And he was just like, be quiet, don't tell anybody. I'm like, what do you mean, don't tell me? In the cops, you post it all over Facebook all the time. Like, but
yeah,
he's one of the guys that can't just sit at home all day. Like, he's got to be out making sure people are doing. You know, he's breaking. I mean, the thing that blows my mind is, like, Trinidad. Like, it's bad enough that even if Trinidad decides, like, nope, we're going to break up parties, like, that means that it's bad enough if Trinidad is breaking up parties.
Right now, we have, I think, like, 82 confirmed cases.
Yeah.
About 2-3 deaths so far.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we have, like, I think they tested, like, 500 or 600 people. But we're not doing too bad so far for what it is. But if we continue, like, disobeying the law and doing that kind of party stuff or whatever, then it'll definitely spike, I think.
Well, let me ask you this. Neither one of us are medical experts, so I don't want to keep forcing you to have to talk about, like, medical issues. But what are you – I'm curious what your thoughts have been as an artist sort of being locked down right now. I mean, it's been interesting for me I've been tracking the way my brain processes things and the way I sort of check myself over time.
Mm-hmm.
I have been absolutely blown away at how quickly I go from, like, everything's cool to being like, fuck it all, let's just drink rum all day. Like, like, I don't have the middle, like, the middle part of the governor. Yeah. Listen, dude. you have white oak, I have Bacardi. So I feel like as an artist throughout my day, when things are normal, I'm just like, art's important and let's do art and let's, like, be making rhythm and doing all these things. And then when this thing hit, and I saw the entire world online being like, artists, we need you now more than ever, I sort of had this moment where I was just like, go fuck yourselves. Like, I spent my whole life trying to convince you that what I do is important. And now you want me to give it away?
You're trying to make me feel important, but yeah, it doesn't count now.
All I want to do is lay on my couch and just watch Netflix and hope this goes away quick. You know, like, that's not a rational reaction. I'm not saying it's healthy, but that's where I've been recently. And I'm just sort of clocking it as we go. I'm not saying I wish I'd have done anything different. It's just like, that's where I'm at right now. And I'm curious for you. Where are you at?
I'm sort of at the same place.
Okay.
Like,
okay. I feel better. I feel a little better.
Yeah, because, like, all right, I actually had to take my drums to the studio last week, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I had to do a track, took it there. I actually left it because I was like, nah, this is going to be probably over. Not too soon, but it'll be all right, and we're going to get under control that I could still go to the studio and do stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
But then it just, like, took a turn, and they're like, you need to stay home. I'm like, oh, shit. So my drums are not home. I have some snare drums hanging around, but it's like, I don't even feel to play. Like, I just feel to chill. Like, actually, I could just jump in the car right now and just take a drive. Like, don't stop anywhere. Just drive. Like, just see stuff and then just come back. And I might be like, all right, cool. I think I feel better.
Did you ever used to do that as a kid? My parents used to take me for Sunday drives all the time.
Yeah, we used to do that. Like, we used to live east, so we used to drive to, like, Port of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Probably get, like, burgers or pizza or whatever it is. And so it used to be like I would say every other week, like, mm-hmm. a family outing. Let's go. So that was kind of cool. But I'm not a sit down at home kind of guy. I like to be outside, mm-hmm. outdoors. Like, on a regular, I'll go to the river. If I could go to the river every week or the beach, I'll probably do it.
Mm.
Is that crazy? I probably won't bathe at the beach every week, but I'll just like to be outside and in that kind of environment. Drive the truck in some dirt or something. that kind of stuff. So
what do you feel like? Is there anything? Are there any projects that you're working on right now at home that you're like, you know, for me, it's been doing podcasts and just talking to people. Like, I haven't felt like being like, here's my next steel drum solo I'm working on, or here's the way to arrange a blah, blah, blah tune. Like, I've just, talking to people has been the thing for me that has been helpful. For you, is there anything for you that you're like, yeah, when I finally, like, here's the thing I want to do, if I'm going to be locked up till April 30th, which is basically what Trump has told us. I don't know what Trinidad is like, but it's like, if I'm going to be here for another month, like, here's the, what is it you hope now? What do you hope you get done?
Well, our lockdown is until it's for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So hopefully not till the 30th.
Well, I imagine because, it's different for every country that handles
it
differently.
Yeah, because of where you're at too, because y'all are at like, what, a couple hundred thousand? 100-some thousand.
Yeah, it's pretty
cases, I mean, so far.
Yeah,
and like about 3,000 deaths. Right,
and New York, so New York and New England in particular are getting. They have the hardest hit. Yeah.
So, projects at home. Like, actually, I have projects that I need to do, but I don't think I'm just ready to do them as yet. Yeah. Like, I have some stuff to paint. Like house projects, not actually music projects that I want to work on. So, like last, kind of changing topic. Last week I started doing, like posting a video like every other day or whatever, because I have a lot of footage that I haven't had the time to edit it's just there. I haven't even gotten around to panorama footage yet, because the main shot from that video, I don't have.
What happened to
it? Like, I didn't put on the camera. I put on the camera, but I didn't hit record.
Do you have any other angles?
I have another angle, but it's like, to use that as the main angle is like horrible.
But what if it's the only angle we have? Then perhaps you should use it, my friend.
I know, but it's like, it sucks.
Well, I will say from my standpoint, one of the things that's, when I teach drummers here, the first thing I do is I tell them to Google you and find your YouTube page, because some of the best, and this is something we've been messaging a bit over the last year or so about doing some sort of method book and talking about like cataloging a proper calypso beat, when you say proper calypso beat, it's like calypso is like, there's 15,000 different ways you can play a calypso.
Variations, yeah.
And then there's, yeah, okay, then what's a soca? Then what's a chutney soca? What is a, like, how do you play a chutney soca in the minor? Like, what are you changing? Like, all of those things are things that, as a, for drummers in the States, like, you're really one of the few resources I can send them to be like, check this guy out. Right. And I wish there was like, just a website of like chutney soca minor jam, and it's just you playing what somebody could start off thinking of, chutney rather than just soca, playing the same soca all the whole tune. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's that is like definitely all about feel and vibe, because like all of these rhythms are definitely connected and like all are the same. It's just that you'll play them at different tempos, or, you know, you'll just add in an extra hi-hat somewhere, or a ride cymbal or something. It's just basically all the same. They're just different tempos. So it's like calypso and so.
Listen, dude, I'm going to push back a little bit here. Like, no, they're not all the same. Like, it has to do, like, you're so nonchalant about the way you approach this stuff. You're like, we put in an extra hi-hat, it'll be fine. It's like, no. That's, yes, but there's years of experience that come from knowing when to and why to put in the hi-hat.
And
definitely. If there was some sort of like, oh, the reason to put in hi-hat here is because it happens to connect with this new bass note that's put in the minor section that's not there. Whatever. Like, that's not what it is. But it's more than just being like, I don't know, feel it. What are your vibes? It's like, come on, there's more than that.
Because it's always been about feel for me. It's about feel and that vibe now. It's like, I'm at my best when I have other good musicians around, and the energy, we get to trade off that energy.
Yeah.
So like push and pull. Like, there are times that you'll be playing and it's just, all right, it's cool groove, we're going down. and nobody's making that effort to push.
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, all right, I might have to do it. All right, make that extra push. And that might just encourage someone else to push back. And it just gives that vibe.
Are there, I'm sorry to transition very quickly into just like Jerry on the drummer, but it's more interesting than talking about coronavirus, in my opinion. What is there anything in particular with your arrangements or with your work with like Bungie and Fayanne and other soca artists in Trinidad where like there's something in particular about your contribution? I mean, the guys in SO have been talking about it all the time, like Jerrion's feel is amazing. It's like there's a reason you play with Bungie and all those folks. It's because your time is great. But if that was all you brought to the table, I still am not convinced that you would be the drummer for Fayanne and Bungie. I think you bring other things to the table, like you were just saying. Like you do something, you push it, you change the energy, and then the tune is there. Can you give an example of like this is something Jerrion brought to the table where a tune that Fayanne and Bungie where they turned around and looked at you live or something, and they were just like, "Whoa, you've never done that before. That was awesome." Like, can you talk about a moment like that?
There are times things like that happen, but honestly, I think that working with a lot of people is definitely not just about the playing. Like you have to be solid. Like, all right, I consider myself, I'm solid. You're going to get all your notes like the same intensity. Like I mix my own playing. Like you have to mix yourself as a musician. Like your hands have to sound same. So if you hit your hand, your snare with your left hand or your right hand, it has to sound the same. Like you need to be balanced. I think I'm a very balanced player for the most part. I'm very reactive in terms of, okay, we're catching our vibe and we're going this direction, mm-hmm. I'll definitely be able to follow and keep up. I think those two things are like most important.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, I definitely think that your natural vibe and personality has a lot to do with being around artists and working with artists, because some persons, right, you might be a great player, but your energy and your vibe is like not correct, and that's a big thing. I think that makes a lot of difference. So it's like being great on the kit is one thing, but being a good person outside of that is like a different thing. Like
how much would you say
you can't have too much attitude and that kind of stuff, you know?
How much would you say your experience, like now having worked with someone like Bungie for a long time, like how much would you say your cachet or your reputation with that organization or that group is built on? Like if you were to break it down percentage wise, the percentage of it that has to do with Jerrion being a good drummer versus the percentage of it that has to do with Jerrion being a good collaborator in the moment when you're playing music versus the final part, which is how much of it is a percentage of Jerrion just being a fun hang, like someone to be with on the road, in the green room, on the bus, on the plane? Like how does that percentage break down for you?
I think it's like, I'm not going to go too in depth, but I think it's like 50, 25, 25, that kind of vibe, respectively, because as I used to work with Sherwin before. And he used to always say something about I don't need the best player, but I need the best attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to be able to work well with others. And that's very important. So it's like, you gotta be really mindful of these things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's something. Oh, we have a visitor here. Hold on.
Hey, Steph.
Hold on a second. I'll unplug it so you can hear him.
Hi, Jerrion. Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Just chilling.
Good. At least you all have sun. We don't really have sun. Yeah,
we do. We actually have some great sun right now. It's like epic outside.
Oh. Outside is
nice. Jerrion, turn that camera image around.
That's so mean.
Nice. Stop it. God damn it, dude.
That's so mean.
Outside is great. It's kind of hot, but oh, but it's nice. Okay.
I'm leaving. It's cold.
Is it worse? Is it? Is it worse being stuck on your porch with that view, or being stuck in Connecticut with that view? Do you think?
Connecticut.
That's where I'm at.
Connecticut, definitely.
Yeah. Well, anyway, just to say, like, yeah, that's something that's hard to it's hard to talk to students about a little bit, because they're just like, oh, Jerrion, he's good, so that must be the reason he's with Jerrion or with Bungie, or he's playing with Skiffle, or he's playing with Pan Elders. It's like, yes, 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 yes. He's gotten the sort of important things out of the way, which are having good time, knowing what stuff to hit, whether you're hitting with the lead line or the background, like. But then,
and knowing not to overplay, that's like a huge thing now. Like a lot of guys now are like overplaying. In my view, like
when you say overplay, music, what do you mean? Because you can't overplay volume wise with a panorama steel band.
No, I'm
not even with a smaller, like even pan around the neck band. I imagine you can't be like, that's too loud. Like
it could happen.
What do you mean by overplay within a Trinidadian band? Overplay
in terms of playing more, or not playing what's required. Like, there's, all right, some guys will play strictly the groove and play the song, like, you know, very basic, and it'll work. Like, the song is going to, because at the end of the day, you're not you're not shining here. You're not the lead.
Mm-hmm.
The drummer is not the lead of any steel band. Like, you're the lead of the rhythm in terms of keeping it together, and you know, you're the heartbeat, but you are not the lead instrument in terms of you need to be heard 100% of the time, or you need to play everything, you know? There's some things you need to not play and let the instruments shine. And some people don't understand or realize this. So overplaying meaning, all right, some drummers will play every single phrase. Frontline playing something, they play that. Background playing something, and it just ends up sounding like noise. Like, it's not getting a chance to breathe. And that's I think one of the problems we have, especially with the younger drummers. I don't know, but some arrangers like that. So it's kind of weird. Like, I can't tell you that, all right, you're overplaying, but the arranger told you to play that. It's like, you know,
right, if the composer wants it, then the composer,
yeah,
like,
then the composer
argue.
Wants it, that's what you have to do. Yeah, definitely.
Well, not. And that, but that leads me to this question, which is, I'm curious how much of your particular approach to the way you play with panorama bands has been sort of colored by the way that the panorama band's arrangers you've played for have arranged, which has predominantly been, well, no, I guess can't say this. Like, Kendall, a lot of his music relies on low pan stuff, lots of cello lines, lots of basses, like tenor bass, like their lines are like, to me, having looked at the score for his charts over the last 10 years, I've been like, oh, that's actually where, and I started noticing you hitting some low stuff that wouldn't have been my instinct. My instinct might have been to hit the lead line, but but like early on, since Big in the Dance, when I first met you, was like, oh, or Lego, I think it, I can't remember which one. No, Big in the Dance.
Nah, Big in the Dance.
Big in the Dance. You didn't play Lego. Kendall did.
No, I didn't play that.
And it was like, oh wow, if you hit the low bass line where the melody actually is, then the variations that are happening in the lead and double tenors, double seconds or whatever, like that actually makes more sense. It's like, oh, wow, that's a crazy thing to think about. For you, I feel like that's, though, specifically the way Kendall writes a lot of panoramas is very low pan heavy. Same with Boogsy. But I'm curious for you, like, you also play with Pan Elders a bunch. Like, and that Devon had been arranging for them. Like, for you, what was the first panorama you ever played drums for, and what was the biggest thing you took away from that experience? Of like, oh my god, I can't believe if I do anything in drumming for a panorama for Trinidad Panorama, this is what I have to do as, you know, 19-year-old Jerrion, or however it was that, however old you were.
Well, it definitely wasn't 19. So my first panorama was what year was that? 2001? I can't remember. I think I was like 15 years old. That was, rest in peace.
Wait, you were 15?
Yeah.
Oh, when you said I definitely wasn't 19, I thought you were gonna be like I was not 20. I was like 25 until I was like, no, you were 15 when you played your first.
15 when I played my first large panorama. That was with it was BW Invaders at the time. Was it Caribbean yet? No, it was still BWIA Invaders. Uh-huh. I
think. Yeah, because they were the airline company, British West Indian Airlines, before Caribbean Airlines.
Before they took
I came down in 2002, that was the airline I flew, was BW.
Right. So I think it was 2001. That was Ken Professor Fillmore.
Mm-hmm.
What song was that? I can't even remember what song it was. But I kind of got thrown into the fire that year. I've been playing Pan with Invaders for two or three years before
about
that.
Halfway up and then Coke.
And the then drummer was Foster. You know Foster? Leon Foster Thomas.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so he was the drummer for Invaders at the time. He left Trinidad. I think he went to Miami to go to school or something.
Yeah.
And,
did he study with Don Batson at Moore?
Yes,
Florida,
I think so.
Florida
Memorial? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's exactly where he went. So they were like, they needed a drummer. I've been playing like stateside stuff with Birdsong before that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some minor stuff. But the captain of the band, manager of the band at the time, that was Ricardo Hubert. He was like, he came to a show I had.
Oh my god, dude, sorry, I don't mean to. Do you know Dougie?
Yeah, I heard he's in hospital.
He just passed away.
Oh shit.
Kendall just texted me. Dude, I'm sorry to do this live on a
damn, that sucks.
Yeah, let me just Dougie passed away from the coronavirus, and Jelani's grandfather also passed away. Oh my god, dude.
What the hell?
Fuck.
Yeah, my phone is ringing now. Yeah.
Yeah. Do whatever.
Yeah.
Do you want me to check back in with you? I'm sorry, dude, that we're getting all these texts not like.
Yeah. I'll hit you back in a little bit.
We'll edit this out. Don't worry. I'm not going to publish this part publicly, but.
Nope. Yeah, no problem.
Your video went away.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. That breaks my heart. I mean, Dougie's a, you know, not a uncomplicated dude and a lot of. But Dougie was the first person who accepted me into a yard in Brooklyn.
Yep.
As a white guy to come in and drill. And that's where I met you, was because of Kendall and Dougie. Yep. Like, oh no, man.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I got to call you back, Josh.
Yeah. Call me. Just text me when you're.
Yeah. All right.
Big hugs, bro. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Same to you.
Bye.
Yep.
Yo, dude.
Yeah, right.
Man, listen. Never. I have not done a podcast. This is like my 97th podcast, and I have not had one that has had to deal with this sort of. I feel sort of bad even trying to capture this on a recording, but like, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. I don't know what to do. Let me just say that, RIP Dougie.
Yeah, for real.
You know, I will say that. You know, it's public. People have been posting it on Facebook, so it's not like I'm giving anything away that's not public. But
knowledge. Yeah.
I would say that, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me right now, thinking about the reason you and I met, actually, frankly, was partially due to Dougie.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think had Dougie not been running Crossfire and had Dougie not asked Kendall to arrange, I have this very distinct image of burned in my brain of standing in front of Crossfire's Panyard behind that gas station in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And looking back and being like, Kendall, who's the guy on the drums? And him being like, Jerion. And me being like, Jeron.
Yeah, it took you a little while.
Can you kick him in the pants here? And you were like, first of all, my name's Jerrion. And second of all, I don't even know what you mean by kick him in the pants. But, you know, Dougie was my first, in terms of band captains, people who were running or owning or running a band in New York. As far as for their Brooklyn Panorama, Dougie was running a band called Crossfire, and Kendall was arranging a tune called Big in the Dance, and he had me come in and drill it the year after I had done Lego, and that's where you and I met. And
was that 2016?
No, I want to say 15? It was before that. 15 was ICP. I want to say it was prior to that, even like 13, 14.
Serious? Damn.
Yeah, that's been long. Right? I mean,
time flies.
It might not have been too far prior to ICP in 2015, but it was whenever Big in the Dance was. And because we did Big, you and I
think
knew,
I was 14.
I knew you from Big in the Dance. I knew you from
Out to the Box.
Out to the Box scene.
Scene.
And then.
Definitely ICP.
ICP. And then Far From Finished.
Far From Finished.
And then this past year.
Alex was there. Yeah,
and Jerry was drilling mostly, and I came in sort of just for a couple of days towards the end. But, you know, anyway, that's where you and I met first, and that's where for me as a driller, I was in just to say as a white guy being like, I'm about to tell a drummer from Trinidad that I have an idea. I'm curious what he thinks about it. What can you talk for 2 seconds about, like, what it was? Like, let's try as best we can to stay positive about this particular time period that I'm currently having rushed back into my memory, which is clouded by this current event, which is Martin Douglas passing away of coronavirus. Martin was the owner of a band called Crossfire. Crossfire is a New York Panorama band that Kendall was arranging for in 2000. Let's say it was around 14.
Yeah, around 14.
You had come up to drum, and I had come over from NYU, at which point Kendall had just graduated, and I was like, hi, I'm Josh Quillen, and I'm going to talk to you about steel drums. I'm curious what your first, like, I met you, and then I was like, Kendall, that guy's amazing. And then I drove home. I'm curious what the next conversation was whenever he went and then talked to you. Were you like, that guy is see-through, and I don't ever want to hear anything he has to say ever again?
it definitely didn't go that way, because clearly you knew what you were speaking about. It's like hearing you talk and explain certain things, it's like, okay, you definitely knew what you were doing. You may not have said it in ways that I would have been accustomed to.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
But that's how you would talk. It's just different. Initially, it's kind of not the same, but just the way you say certain things, like kick it in the pants and these kind of things, it's like...
Well, when I would say that,
heard that what is expression that, before.
What, like, when I... This is interesting for me. Like, when I came to Trinidad for the first time in, you know, 2001 or 2 or whenever that was...
Right.
When I landed here, I was like, okay, there's a lot of things that are different. Mm-hmm. My skin color, the food, like all of this, all of the most obvious stuff. But then I was like, oh, these people love slang too. And where I grew up in Ohio, like the only difference between where I grew up in Ohio and where you grew up in Trinidad was the skin color. It's like, you know, yeah, the words we used for somebody who we thought was interesting or not interesting were different.
Right.
But... Or whether we liked something or didn't like something. Like, those were all different. But it was like, oh, we just made up words for everything. Like, oh, well, I can identify with this. And so when I said kick it into the pants to you, I was like, well, I'm just going to lob this out here. And I'm pretty sure Jerrion will eventually understand what it is I'm asking for. Because
I definitely did.
You know.
It definitely did, but it's just like, hey, and then the first time I was like, kick it in the pants, all right. And then that kind of became a thing for us. Like, yeah, it's like normal for us now. Like, yeah, don't worry, you all do it like this, and Jerrion, you come in, and then just kick it in the pants, and it's like, all right, good. That's just how it, you know, like, we good now. But like, initially, I was like, no, you knew what you were talking about, you know? and it was actually like great working with you. Like, the combination of you and Jerry is like so cool now. Like, Jerry is a little, I want to say a bit rougher and could kind of tap into the persons who, you know, don't like to pay attention and these kind of things. Mm. And then you just bring the different side of the coin and just, you know, just get it done. Like, it's like both of y'all working together is like great, like for me. Like, seeing y'all do that, it's like he's cleaning it up and then like you just fine tune it. Like, you just come with that fine tooth comb and just, you know.
I'm asking questions right now, and please, and you and I have been friends long enough. Sorry, I was going to get there, but I've had a lot of rum and Coke. Are you drinking rum and Coke, or are you just drinking rum and ice? Is that your drink?
Nah, I'm drinking rum and water. Yeah, white oak and water.
I'll post a picture of your wall of white oak before we end this. You know, for Geryon, one of the things that has been, I don't want to say a struggle, but just a sort of hurdle that I feel like I'm obligated to try to jump, just as the bag of bones and flesh that I happen to have been put in as a white kid from Ohio. Like, there's certain things that I don't feel like I have authority to necessarily do or say that Jerry does. And
right,
there's some, and I say that, I don't know, I'm sort of asking but also saying, like, this is how I feel, but I'm curious how you feel. I've noticed it this year with Bravo, with Skiffle, to a different degree than with Jerry, there's just some things he can say to a group of 130 players, 140 players, that I can't. There are certain things that he can say that everybody understands very quickly that I necessarily don't. That if I said the exact same thing, not everybody, like, it doesn't mean the same thing. And I'm not asking you to sort of dissect like what the racial sort of nuances are amongst white and black people. But for me, it's been interesting to be on my side of the sort of drilling equation, to be like, what is appropriate? What is not appropriate? Like, those, I guess appropriate is the word that I guess I'm asking you to sort of address here. Like, why has it always felt oddly inappropriate for me to say the things that Bravo would say to a band or Jerry would say to a band, but it's inappropriate for me, the white guy who has met with Jerry and Bravo on the side a million times. We both have the exact same idea of what needs to happen,
right?
But there's just a certain permission that Bravo had or Jerry has that I don't. I'm not trying to put you in a weird position, even though I currently definitely am.
But you already did.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm trying to preface it with all this other sort of like bullshit of like, I guess I'm trying to get people to understand what it's like, the sort of trepidation I have entering into a world where I'm the only white voice in the room. B, what does that mean? Does it matter? Do I have the clout to say anything? What is my authority? Like, I don't want you to speak for everybody in Trinidad, but like, how do you personally process that stuff?
The thing is, all right, I'm a musician. I've been a musician for my whole life.
Yeah.
I've traveled. I've interacted with persons of all racial backgrounds, even spiritual backgrounds and all these kind of things. So it's like, you could say that I'm cultured, basically. Mm-hmm. I know. I have friends from everywhere. It's like, I know how to deal with these things. I've been to places where I have been you, basically, in terms of everyone around me is white.
Like what? And, like where? Where has that happened?
Okay, so...
Other than Akron, Ohio, when you came to the Steel Band.
That's the second place, probably. But
well, that's a special place because they all know you and they know who you are and they know what you bring. Yeah, so it's a unique
It's definitely
experience.
Different. But all right, so probably 10 years ago or more, Invaders used to do this... I forget what they call it. It's in Branson, Missouri.
Okay.
So we used to travel there and do like it's like a theme park. So they perform us from all over the world. Uh-huh. I think there were like probably two black groups, but we were like the main Negro group on the park. Mm-hmm. But definitely when you walk around the park or interact with persons, everyone in your show, like, you don't really see black people around. Mm-hmm. Like, it's only white people.
Yeah.
Just being around and interacting with them, like, firstly, the name issue.
What do you mean?
Yeah, so like introducing yourself and getting that person to actually say a name or remember your name was like a huge thing. That's like a big thing.
Like, people didn't understand your accent, or they're like, Jerry, yeah, that's accent, a weird name.
The accent was one thing, and then actually pronouncing the name was kind of weird. I don't know, it's kind of weird for some people. Mm. But people call me all kind of names, like Geronimo.
Geronimo,
yeah. Like, yeah, this is Jerry. All right. Hey, Geronimo. Nice to meet you.
Can I ask you something? Like, I'm asking questions. And again, please, what I'm saying to you is like trying to preface things for people who don't know you and me.
Right.
I know that I can ask you any question and you're not going to judge me.
Right. Because what I'm getting to is that a lot of persons don't have that background or have never been around enough persons to actually understand you.
Right.
Or persons like you. If I were to put it like that.
Yeah, no, no. I want to encourage you to put it like that, because when you say like me, I'm also saying like you. I mean, you have...
Yes.
When I know you, we're having a conversation right now. We've spoken for about 45 minutes total today, and I've understood every word you've said to me, except between you and me, when you're with Kendall, and then Anthony comes in the room, and then somebody else who's from Trinidad comes in the room, I immediately am pushed to the fringes of the conversation of, like, I don't understand anything these guys are saying. Like, you guys talk so quick. And
that's when we get to that comfort zone and we just start talking regular.
Like. Yeah, no. Well, but you say regular. What I say, what I'm saying, I want to encourage that. But again, it's just the sort of like the fear that anybody has, whether it's you're entering a French culture, whether you're entering an African culture, whether you're entering, you know, far north Canadian culture, or you're going to Louisiana, where the slang in Louisiana is nothing like what it is in anywhere else in the world, you know.
Right.
In Trinidad, I think that slang is a very particular thing, and for me, I have always felt blessed to be around people who, when they're around me, they talk slow.
Right.
But then when there's more than me and you, as soon as I'm outnumbered, the conversation speed like exponentially increases.
It picks up.
Yeah, and I'm actually okay with that. It's frustrating. It is frustrating because I don't understand people that I care about, people I genuinely would take a bullet for, like you and Kendall and Mark and Odie and everybody in that crew. I'd take a bullet for all of you, but I don't understand half of what you're saying. I guess part of me is having to accept that, like, the thing I've learned over time is, like, that's okay sometimes. You don't...
It is, but that just means that you're not around enough.
Yeah, no, I know. Man, I'm in Connecticut. I know. I'm trying, bro.
Yeah, you need to be around a little more often, because then it's gonna come natural to you in the long run. Like, when you're around it for, you know, a long time, obviously, it will get better, you know? But it's just that the whole thing is, a lot of persons won't look to you to say certain things because they probably don't expect that you would know or understand in terms of what can this guy tell us about the instrument or playing or whatever. Mm-hmm. They may not know your exact background or even how to comprehend you talking to them about this. So that's my whole point. It's like, it's cool for me and it's a norm, but some persons won't understand it like that, or it won't compute like that in their heads, you know what I mean?
Do you find that people in, like, when, let's say I'm talking in front of a band in Trinidad, like, and I've done this enough, every time I've spoken in front of a band in Trinidad or Brooklyn, you have been sitting at the drums. So I can ask this question. You've been in that seat enough to know. Do folks in the band that I'm speaking to understand everything I'm saying? Or is my, and I'm asking this out of ignorance, is my accent, in the same way that I'm admitting that I don't always understand the, I think I can understand the intent, but I don't understand every word that's being said in a conversation amongst Trinidadians. But when I come in the room and I say something, does everybody understand what it is I mean? You mentioned that you didn't understand what kicking in the pants meant. I say that. I say shit like that all the time. Like
exactly. But I think a bit, it's a bit of that too, because all right, we speak fast amongst ourselves. Or in general, we speak fast. But our speaking fast, we will all understand. But when you're speaking like just now you were speaking, I would understand everything you're saying.
Yeah.
But you in front of a band talking normal, everybody might take a second to all right, what word is that he said?
Mm. Or
because you definitely you would say things a bit differently, you know, or pronounce words slightly different or whatever it is. So some people might not grasp everything as you're saying it because you do speak fast as well, but that's it's different.
You know? I have always secretly been suspicious of the fact that I speak just as quickly in my ridiculous Ohio dialect as you do in your Trinidad dialect.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
I'm a little insecure by that. So it's helpful for me that you point that out, to be honest. Like, because my goal, I think if I die, let's say I die in 5 years from now on a deathbed of whatever it is, my goal would be that I hopefully am able to impart information on to Panorama Steel Bands, because I feel like it is akin to the way the Cleveland Orchestra, the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Berlin Philharmonic, like those large 90, 110-piece organizations are dealt with in the world. I feel like Desperados, Skiffle Bunch, Phase 2 should also be viewed in that same light. And so for me, I just get excited and I'm just like, kick him in the pants. And like everybody in the band's like, kick him in the pants? What the fuck are you talking about? The only person who understands is you. And I'm, you know, and you sort of understand my intent, but like, that's coming from, you know, Josh Quillen from 3 years old, growing up in a cornfield in Ohio. Like, it's hard to translate all that across, you know, 30 or 40 years worth of dialect and learning
and persons who never heard kick it in the pants.
Right, like, right.
What the hell is this man talking about? Kick it in the pants? What pants? Whose pants?
Whose pants? Do I own these kick pants? What? Have I paid for these pants?
Kick what? You know, it's funny. It's like, it's like me the first time I heard it. It's like, what is he talking about? Kick it in the pants. And then I understood after, but it's like,
well,
when you do that now in front of a band, they're like, what is this crazy guy talking about?
Well, without the sort of advantage of being able to tell everybody, like without the sort of the luxury of telling everybody what it is I think about all the time when I say it, there's a tiny part of me that hopes that like what I hope I'm injecting right now is like everybody in this 140-piece steel band or within Penn Elders, within a smaller 60 to 90 piece, needs to understand is that this guy can actually force you all to go one way or another. And then I'm going to step back. And it's like, if all you take from this is this idea that the drummer has the power to push you one way or another, then I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And with Panorama Steel Bands, that's a tricky thing to get across to people. Because everybody's worried about their notes. They're all getting changes at the last minute. Their section leader has told them something that doesn't make sense from what the arranger has told. Like everybody's, you know, navigating a million different things. And, you know, I was texting with Anthony the other day about Invaders. And I said, you know, dude, like who drills Invaders?
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, nobody. I was like, what do you mean nobody drills Invaders? He's like, we just do sectional practice all the time. I was like, dog, my phone is on. Like, you know where to fucking find me, dude. Like, I'll come up for 5 minutes and just be like, oh, if you just think about these three things, great, I'll never see you again. Like, that's easy. You don't have to do anything. Nobody's drilling invaders. Like, dude.
I think they do section practice. And I think Arden, Gary and Joe probably just, you know, work certain parts. But it's not like they have a drill master or someone dedicated to that job. I don't think they do it.
Well, anyway, it's just to say, for me, it's like, it's an interesting thing. I have been thinking a lot of the last couple of years of what, you know, what is appropriate, what's my role, what's inappropriate. Is there a point at which it becomes too aggressive, where I'm pushing too much? Like, is there, like, where is the appropriate line to draw in terms of, like, what you can do as a foreigner to influence or to help? Or just, to me, it's less of a help. Helping means, like, yo, you've got an arm broken and I need to help you. It's like, no. I'm not helping anything. I want to advocate. I want to shine a light on this thing that I think is fucking rad. And
I don't know.
The best way I can do that?
I definitely don't think there's a line. I think, you see, once you have the right intent, and once we're all on the same mindset and we have that same goal in our sights, it's like, then it shouldn't matter how you deal with the whole, you know, getting the job done. It's like, we want to get to this goal, and getting to this goal means Josh is going to curse twice during the practice or whatever it is. I'm just saying, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying
that I curse from time to time. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. But you have never been, you were never disrespectful to the band or any players at any point in time. There are some persons who are like that. But that's why I think we don't. There's not a line that has to be drawn of where you can take, you know, your expertise, because you're very good at what you do. So my thing is, push it. Like, people need to understand that there's a bigger picture, and you are definitely not going to, like, be not punishing or anything, but you're not going to try to disrespect anyone. But this has to be done for the goal to be achieved, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So just get it done, by any means.
I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
My thing is, like, in some bands, arrangers or drum masters will be like really hard and really tough. And
sorry.
Some players will definitely take whatever happens, or they'll just, you know, take it all in. And you go by other bands, and if you even say, hey, you're playing shit, they might be offended. Hey. And it's like, you need to, it's all about players too, boy. Some players are a lot touchy, and I don't know, boy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I feel like, I mean, if I had to put, like, if I had like $1 million, I didn't know where to invest it in terms of, like, panorama success in the future, I would say, like, all right, I'm going to plunk my $1 million on Skiffle Bunch right now. And we're going to stick it there. And I'm going to show up in December, and I'm going to sit there from Christmas until March. And I'll be goddamn, like, there's a part of me personally, selfishly, I think I'm trying to admit a little bit of this is selfish, is like, I think I know that if I could sit with a band from Christmas until mid-February, late February, and just, like, camp out, I'm going to be in that yard goddamn every fucking day, making sure every entrance is where it needs to be. You know, the three cello player, when you know you come in, you're coming in on the E of one, not on the one, the E of one.
E of one.
Yeah, like, all of those little things, like, man, if I could just plant that stake in the ground from day one, holy shit, I am absolutely confident I could get Skiffle Bunch to win first place by like 30 points. It wouldn't even be close.
Ah!
You know?
Damn.
That's just me. I'm calling my shot a little bit, but there's a tiny part of me that's like, I mean, it's not this. And the reason I say that isn't because I feel like I have, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's just if you can get people in the room committing to one idea.
Exactly.
For a long period of time.
That's been one of the problems I think a lot of bands face. Is, all right, there are people who are here because they genuinely want to be here.
Yeah.
There are persons who are here just because, all right, my friend's doing it, so I'll come play. There are persons who are here hired. Some people who are hired do their best. Some people are just there for the money.
Right.
It goes all directions. But if we don't all have the same goal or want to achieve the same goal, like, it does not work. It's like we all have to have the same head and push forward together, you know?
Right.
So it's like, I have a funny story. So this year for Panorama, we're in practice and one of the guys in the rhythm section is like coasting. He's just like, we have no reason to play right now. The other sections are drilling something and whatever's going on, and he's just there coasting. And I'm like, dude, like, take a break now. Like, let the fans do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to get it. The guy watched me and tell me, I can't talk to him because I wasn't in practice for a couple of days or some shopping like that. I was like, what? I was like, okay, cool. Mind you, we start playing and homeboy is in practice every day and he still cannot play the song without making mistakes. And I'm like, so you on me for missing a couple of days or whatever, and you're here every day and still can't play properly. Mm-hmm. So who's at fault here? What are you really trying to get at? What's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to better yourself. And so I just didn't tell him anything. I think he actually didn't make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not going to play. And then he came and worked extra hard to make sure he was on point. Mm-hmm. And he ended up playing. And then he apologized after. Mm. And I'm like, why are you apologizing now? It's like, you have to understand that, all right, even if someone's not there every day and they still put in the work and getting the job done, because you're there every day doesn't mean that you could say something if you're not doing the job.
Right.
Because showing up is one thing, but actually doing the job is something else.
It's a tricky thing.
Getting the job done. Yeah.
That's a hard thing for I will say for myself included, like, that's a hard thing for human beings to sort of choke down, this idea. And I'm bringing this up because of you in particular. If I was doing a podcast with anybody else, I would say, like, I maybe wouldn't bring this up. But, like, one of the things that's hard for us, and when I say us, I mean me, us normal human beings, is that we can't all process things as fast as folks like you. And I say that because as somebody who's been in front of the band being like, Jerrion, hit this hit, don't hit this hit, on the E of two, hit this hit, and then hit this hit. Like, it, you know, do you get it on the first time every time? No. But by the second or third time, it's locked in.
Yeah.
And then it's game's over. Like, I don't care. I can move on to other things. I think for a lot of musicians, that's a hard skill to learn. And I think one of the things that's hard, I will say, for me, but also I can imagine for you, is to acknowledge that a lot of folks just don't have that skill set, this ability to take in everything. Like, when I'm yelling at you about something, in my head, I'm like, I know that Jerrion is going to get this within the next three times I say it.
Right.
I don't need to say it past three times. And then normally I would say 99% of the time, it's within the first time that I say it that you get it. But then sometimes you get to the second time and I have to sort of poke my, I have to like lean underneath the lead pans to look back at you and you're like, oh yeah, that's where that hit was supposed to go. And then by the second time you get it, very rarely is it by the third time that I have to say anything. And that's
happens sometimes.
But that's a skill set that I think musicians need to learn, is this idea that like, it doesn't, I don't care how fucking good you are. What I need you to do is hit on the E of one, drop a bomb there. I don't give a fuck what you think. I don't care what you hope the world should be or look like after this is over. But what I want you to do is hit on the goddamn E of one. And, and then
and
from
it,
there,
and it's strong.
It will go from
it
there.
It's where I want it. Know. And that's just it. That's be there. Play. Play. Do it correct. Good,
but in Trinidad and steel bands where it can be because a lot of the music is taught by rote, because a lot of the music is taught by someone speaking, I think it does, like for you as a drummer who tends, I feel like you absorb things quicker than most other drummers. Like for you, what is the larger frustration from just the slowness of the absorption of the data that the musicians around you need to absorb, or is there something else?
It's a bit of that sometimes, but I hate to sit in a practice and play one thing for an hour or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I understand why it's done though, because obviously I played Pan before, so I know what it is, you know, and I totally understand that. But now it's like, I don't need to do it. Like, like I have it already, but it's not just for me, it's for the band. So it's like a lot of persons need to hear everything and you're not gonna surprise them. As you would say, don't surprise me tomorrow. Like, let me know what I'm getting today, you know?
Right.
Like, give it your all, let's get it together as a band, and tomorrow we're gonna do exactly what we did today, practice, and we have it perfect. We're gonna just execute it tomorrow, you know, that kind of way. So it's like, for some people, if I'm not there, it's like it obviously will feel different. The practice might feel different, the vibe might be different, but I need to understand that too. Like, I need to be there and be in it at all times too.
Yeah.
To the best that I can, because some people, I realize there are times when, all right, we're doing the song, whatever, and all right, we put a fill here, put a big fill right here, and I'll be like, all right, cool. I might play something real cool and kind of intricate or whatever, and everybody will like turn around or they might just stop playing, and then, ooh, all right, cool, and then start about to play, and then after I might be like, maybe that's not the right one. Let me play something simple because I need y'all to concentrate on what's next.
Yeah,
I don't need it to look back at me and be like, yeah, I want to hear that.
Right.
Or sometimes you're playing something regular all the time and then you play that real explosive fill or whatever and everybody's like lost and can't come back in where they're supposed to.
Well, that's for me as a driller. Things like this. As for me as a driller, that's one of the hardest things is like I'm standing out in front of a band. I've got one of the best drummers in the world in front of me as a – like if I were to think of every player in the band as a tool, like you are a tool. You're a crescent wrench. You're a hammer. You're a whatever, like a staple remover. Like it doesn't matter. Like whatever the fuck you are, like you are a tool, right? And every instrument in the band is that. For me, I have a hard – there's a real – I mean – I have a real hard time being like, I don't know, listen to this, listen to Geryon, like listen to here. This is the, like, this is the thing you need to listen to. Here is the drop you need to hear. We've talked about it all with Crossfire. Like, what is the drummer's responsibility? And for me, just like, laying down the law, dropping the hammer, dropping the bomb where it needs to drop has been the sort of like predominant responsibility of a drummer. And like you said earlier, like you don't necessarily hear that from every drummer within a Panorama band.
Yeah, definitely not. But as I said before, it all depends on the arranger. Like, I've worked with arrangers who will do a song and they'll be like, yeah, you just play whatever you want to play.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they might tell you, all right, these two parts here, I want exactly this. And that's it. Whereas there are some arrangers who definitely, they have that whole concept of what the drummer needs to play in their head. And they're going to tell you exactly what they want, where, what rhythm, however it is.
Yeah.
And that, with professionalism and with experience, you have to then know, hey, I'm going to play what the arranger asks for. It doesn't matter how good I am or whatever it is. If the arranger doesn't want to fill in a song or whatever it is, then don't put one.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
Like, if he's very, if the arranger is specific and is like, I want this, 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 and nowhere in that has an explosive fill or a change of rhythm that you think will be, you know, good or whatever. If that's what they want, you give them what they want because it's their interpretation of the song.
Right.
Sometimes arrangers ask, like, what do you think? I have an idea for this. What do you think about this rhythm change? Would you use this rhythm or
yeah.
suggest something or whatever it is? And then, you know, then you could work alongside. But, you know, you have to be careful sometimes not to overstep, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when they ask for something, you know, just, all right, this is what you want? Let's try this.
Yeah.
And be willing to work sometimes. Be willing to try things and not just be like, nah. Like, all right, there have been times when an arranger might say, all right, try this Zouk rhythm here. I want it exactly like this. And you play it. And before I even play it, I actually know how it's going to sound. I might be like, it might be great, but still, yeah. let's try it.
Yeah.
Let's try it and yeah. see how it goes. You might play it. It might sound good. And then within playing it, your ideas might kick in and be like, all right, why don't try it like this?
And yeah.
let's just, you
yeah.
know, listen to it and see which one feels better. Sometimes different rhythms just, it just need to tweak it a little bit just to feel right. And
yeah.
at the end of the day, it just has to feel right. It has to feel right, has to song right. And that's about it. It has to sit right. So,
well, listen, man, it's 2:40 p.m. now, and I want to, I'm sorry to, you know, on our second version of this podcast,
for real,
you know, this is one of my, I don't know how to put this other than this is a special podcast. You're a buddy of mine and a friend of ours has passed away who we know.
Yeah, for real.
And I'm grateful for your time. I hope that you and Kronika are doing your living your best life over there in Trinidad.
Yeah, staying safe. She's working from home. So
what does she do for a living?
She's a claim analyst
for an insurance
company.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So is she working from home? Okay, or is she also drinking out of a blue tumbler?
No. She's not a drinker like I am. So. She's good. Once the chef is in the kitchen, she's good. She's very happy.
Well, listen, bro. So. I wanted to tell you that I appreciate your time.
No problem, bro.
I know that time is valuable, regardless of whether or not we are in a pandemic. And I'm grateful for you spending this time with me. You know, you guys are
anytime.
You two are friends of ours, and it breaks my heart that a good friend of ours, Dougie, has passed in the last couple of hours. And I hope that just let's leave on a positive note. What do you hope people take from this particular like moment in time of like? There's someone who, for better or worse, has, you know, he's not an uncomplicated figure in our world, Dougie, in terms of putting people up that we, you know, giving Kendall a chance to arrange for a steel band, giving me a chance to drill for a steel band, like all of those things. Like, what do you hope, knowing all of that stuff in the past, that we moving forward take from this particular ridiculous human moment that we're all sharing?
I just think that we have to all appreciate each other and just live. Like, we take a lot of things for granted. We get upset for a lot of situations and, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes it's actually not worth it, you know what I mean? So we just need to live and, you know, be mindful of our day-to-day things and how it affects other people, you know? Mm. So just need to love and enjoy life and love each other, man.
All right, man. Well, listen, my glass is empty. I don't know about your glass.
Mine is not, but... Well, but I'm good.
My ice is clinking here, so I'm going to go fill it up. Listen, right, bro.
You have a good one, bro.
I am a big fan of you in particular and your wife, Kronika. Me and Stephanie love you all with all our heart. We are, too. And we hope that the two of you are doing well. And if anything, as things proceed in this ridiculous outbreak that we're all dealing with, let us know if you need anything. Okay,
no problem, bro. You be safe too.
All right,
we love y'all.
All right, love you too. We'll talk to you all soon, right. And take care.
All right, later.
All right, see you, buddy. Bye. Okay, enjoy. Hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy, and staying sane. Talk to you soon. Bye.